This is WNRI's special coverage of the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Jeff Gamache. The following is the latest media briefing from the Rhode Island Governor, Gina Raimondo.
We will be right here every day at 1 o'clock to make sure that everybody is well informed and has the best facts as possible so that we can all keep ourselves safe and healthy as we deal with the coronavirus. As you can see from the data displayed on your screens, or will be displayed in a second, the cases in Rhode Island and unfortunately the deaths in Rhode Island and hospitalizations continue to rise. Although that is sad, I don't want folks to panic. It's consistent with what we have expected, and it's why I'm giving you the advice that I'm giving you. I wish we were out of the woods. We are not quite out of the woods yet. And so that means the stay-at-home order, which is in place until May 8th, is something that we all need to continue to obey. I know if your family is anything like my family, it's getting harder every day. We're all sick of it. We all wonder, is it necessary? Wearing a mask makes it even more difficult, but the answers are it is necessary. It's a critical 2 weeks ahead, and if we keep doing the great job we're doing, we are going to be in much better shape in 2 weeks than we are today, and that much closer to going back to work, opening childcare centers, opening parks, and getting to the business of life again that we all want to be doing. So I would just ask you to continue your heroism, all of you. If you're a healthcare worker, you're a hero. If you're one of us that, you know, goes to work every day, thank you. But frankly, if you're just staying home, even though it's hard, keeping yourself isolated, even though it's hard, you're a hero too. You are the reason, actually, that we're doing as well as we are doing, that our hospitals aren't full, that we don't have more fatalities than we do. So thank you. It's brutal, but you're doing it. I'm proud of you, and thank you. I have been asked every day, you know, where's the model, Governor? What does our model look like? Where are we on this disease? What's the track, et cetera? So I thought today I would give you a little bit of an update on our modeling effort, on our modeling team, and give you my best insights as to where I think we are, where I think we might be going. So for the past 6 weeks, we've been hard at work trying to gather data, review the science, talk to experts, and do our very best as a team to make sure we're doing the best job we can for you. So I have put together a team. As I said, I have 10 work streams. One of the work streams is modeling. All they do all day is look at the numbers. It has about a dozen people on it. It includes economists, epidemiologists, toxicologists, data scientists, computer scientists, analysts, and computer coders. It's been a collaborative effort with the Department of Health, our own experts, Brown University, and Brown University's Policy Lab. By the way, I want to give a huge shout out of thanks to Brown University. I called you over a month ago, and you gave us your very best statisticians and public health experts and epidemiologists. Thank you for being a great partner. There are a lot of models out there. You've seen them all. By the way, none of them is perfect. We are basing our model off of a framework that's been provided to us from Johns Hopkins University. We reached out to Johns Hopkins several weeks ago, and we've been validating our work with some of the experts at Johns Hopkins. That team of people that I just described, our dozen people, plus Johns Hopkins, has also been consulting with their counterparts at the University of Washington. And together, they've crafted a model that reflects where we think we are at this time. It is a combination of what we know about the virus from other countries and other communities that are ahead of us, and also the actual Rhode Island experience. It's very important. Every state's different. Every state's done social distancing differently. And so our model includes data around what's actually happening in our community. Now, as you know, I have been reluctant to share a model, and some of you have been critical of that decision. The reason I've been reluctant is because it's not a perfect model. I don't want anybody to look at any model and think it's perfect. It is not a perfect predictor of where we're going. It's not a perfect predictor for a few reasons. First of all, to get any one of these lines, the statisticians do thousands of simulations, and then it's their best estimate, their best guess of, you know, which one of those thousands of lines they think is most accurate. So it's imprecise. Secondly, we've only been at this for a few weeks, really. And here in Rhode Island in particular, the numbers of people in the hospital on ventilators who have unfortunately passed away are actually very, very small. So I have been reluctant to share something that is imprecise. Having said that, we have been working hard at it. It is now in a place where I feel comfortable to put something out to the public to give you a sense of kind of where we are and where we might be going. Again, I want to say this. The single most important variable in the model is the degree of effectiveness of social distancing. Hard thing to measure, by the way. But that is what drives the model the most, any model that you're seeing out there. Here in Rhode Island, I put the social distancing, the stay-at-home order in place just a couple of weeks ago. Any expert will tell you it takes at least 10 days from the time you put that in place to start seeing the effects of that on our hospitalization rate. And our model is pegged to hospitalization rate. Which means, in the model that I think is on the screen or will be on the screen in a second, we only have like a few days of hospitalization data from the point in time that our social distancing has really been effective. So I do want to caution around that. So having said that, if this is directionally correct, we've been at it for 6 weeks, we have dozens of people around it, we're talking to everyone we know, this is directionally correct. So what you see on the screen are two lines. There's a blue line. The blue line you can think of as our best guess of what we think the next few weeks will look like in Rhode Island. The blue line assumes all of the current restrictions, the stay-at-home order, the mask wearing, the social distancing, are in place, and we're doing a pretty good job of adhering to that. Not a perfect job, but a good job of adhering to social distancing. In that scenario, we think our peak will be around May 3rd. That means, you know, last week of April, first week of May, approximately. And at that time, we'll need about 2,250 hospital beds. So, a couple points. That number of hospital beds is a number that we could handle within our existing healthcare system. Every hospital has been working with us furiously to put in place their surge capacity plans within their hospital. And the 2250 would allow us to hospitalize everyone at that peak in our existing hospitals without having to go to the overflow hospitals that we are simultaneously building at the Convention Center and in Cranston. It will be difficult. It will be very difficult. Probably the hospital administrators are getting a little nervous because they're going to have to execute their surge plans, but it is possible. Above that line on your screen, you should be seeing a red line. That red line represents what we think will happen if we stop taking social distancing seriously. And in that scenario, the peak comes sooner, probably closer to April 27th, And obviously the peak is much higher. In that scenario, in the red line that you're seeing, we'll need closer to 4,300 hospital beds. We are working hard to make sure that we would have that many beds. We're not quite there yet, but I want to say this. I don't think we're going to be there. If you say to me, Governor, do you think we're going to be the blue line or the red line? I don't think we're going to be the red line. I don't think that because you're doing an awesome job with social distancing. But you need to know this. The biggest difference between the blue line and the red line is the degree to which we obey the social distancing stay-at-home order. So for those of you who wonder, does it really matter? It really matters. We're talking double the number of deaths, double the number of hospital beds, determined by what we do together as a community right now in the next couple of weeks. My mantra from day one in managing this crisis and motivating my team has been that we will prepare for the worst and work for the best. So I want you to know, Rhode Island, that's what we've done, and because of it, we're in pretty good shape. We've been preparing for the worst. If we need to, we will be ready with over 3,500 hospital beds in the next few weeks. But because we've all been working our tails off, including you and those of you who are staying at home, teaching your kids at home, struggling through this, wearing your mask, washing your hands, because of you, I don't think we're going to see that red line. Now, let me tell you this. A week ago, that red line looked a lot worse. A week ago, or 10 days ago, when we were crunching through the model, that peak was a lot higher. And that, I no longer worry about that anymore. I am no longer worried about what I was a week ago, which is 6,000 or 7,000 people in the hospital. Now, I think that top bound of 4,300 beds, that could happen. I'm not going to lie to you. That could absolutely happen. If everybody on a beautiful day goes to the park, if we all start getting a little lazy, going out, congregating, then we'll look like the red line. However, if we keep doing what we're doing, stay at home, washing our hands, working from home, I actually think our actual experience will be even better than the blue line. And so that's what I'm working for. I'm preparing for the worst, but I am working to beat that blue line. And I want you to do that with me. Because if you do, we can all go back to work sooner, we can go back to school sooner, we can breathe a sigh of relief, and we don't have to begin these press conferences every day with horrible numbers of people sick in the hospital and dying. So I hope in a couple of weeks, I could come back to you with a different set of lines and say, way to go, Rhode Island. We're below that blue line. Our system is not overwhelmed. And we see real light at the end of the tunnel. But I wanted you to see that your hard work is already paying off hugely. Now, for some of you, my family and friends make fun of me because they say I'm a data geek. I have a lot of degrees, and one of them is in economics, so I kind of get into the numbers. But if you're not interested in the numbers, you're not a data geek, you're saying, what does this all mean for me? Let me tell you what I think it means for you. First of all, I think we're doing well. I think we're doing very well. I think we clamped down quickly. I think we did it in a smart, targeted way. And as a result, we're in a better shape than we would have been. And again, 10 days ago, that model, the red line was a much higher number. And I think our actual experience 2 weeks from now is going to be better than the blue line if you all keep doing the hard work of staying at home. Sounds easy. All you have to do is stay at home. It is really hard. Secondly, the peak is a few weeks away. I am not going to pretend that I know it's precisely on May 3rd or April 27th, but I know it's not behind us, and I know it's kind of end of April, early May. It also means these are very preliminary data. Again, our model is based off of hospitalization rates. By the way, why have we done that versus, say, infection rate? Because we know with certainty how many people are in the hospital. We know that. We don't really know the infection rate because we don't really know exactly how many people have this. We definitely know how many people are in the hospital. But we have very limited data on what the hospitalization rate is like since we put in the stay-at-home order. So although that is that's like the Mercedes-Benz of models, we've put so much effort into it and so many brilliant people around it, it's only as good as the assumptions and the data. We have limited data. And again, the final key point is the single biggest variable is the effectiveness of social distancing. That's not all that matters, but that's the biggest variable. So the real takeaway, if you remember nothing else from today, social distancing is working, social distancing is saving lives, and if you hang in there for a couple more weeks, we will be in a much, much, much better place because of social distancing, because of all your effort. I think of what we're doing here as a race, right? So when I say we're planning for the worst and working for the best, it's a race. We're in a race against this virus, a race to put a lid on the virus while we're racing as hard as we can to ready our healthcare system for a surge. And the race that we've been running is getting up testing capacity, purchasing PPE, buying ventilators, adding extra hospital beds, getting folks to figuring out ways to staff these extra hospitals. That's the race we've been running. And I will tell you, when we start to reopen the economy, you're going to see those numbers go up. It's going to happen. Social distancing is what's saving us. That can't be that way forever. But when we start to reopen, and if the numbers go up, we have the hospital beds, we have the testing, we have a lot more information, we're that much closer to treatment, we have more PPE, et cetera, et cetera. So to that point, I want to wrap up this by saying, if you are a healthcare professional who is not working full-time, if you are a part-time worker, a recent graduate, a soon-to-graduate nursing school, a resident, a medical student, a retired physician, a retired therapist, a retired nurse, please go to rirespons.org and sign up and let us know you're willing to help, because it is almost certain that we're going to need extra people to staff beds as we go in the months to come. So that's what we have for modeling, and in a couple of weeks I'll provide another update. Next topic is school. Many of you are probably wondering what's going on with school, and I had hoped to be able to make an announcement this week. You do know, or I will remind you, that we've committed to distance learning through the end of April. I had hoped to be able to make an announcement this week giving guidance for the rest of the school year. But I'm going to hold off on that until probably next week. And I'm sorry that that's frustrating, because I know everybody wants to plan. But I'm going to be very honest with you. This is a huge decision. This is a huge decision. Not only are we talking about 142,000 school kids and all of the teachers and custodians and folks that work in the buildings, but it's also childcare. You know, it's very, very difficult for people to work if schools are closed, particularly for young children, and they don't have childcare. So it's it weighs on me, and I want to get it right, or I want to do the best job I can to get it right. This model shows, and I track it constantly every day, things are changing. As I said, we're in a much better position today than we were a week ago. If everyone keeps doing a great job, I think we'll be in a better position in a week than we are now, in 2 weeks than we are now. So I wish I had an answer today. I'm sorry if that's frustrating for educators and parents. But I need a little more time to look at the evidence, to look at the facts. I am not willing to throw in the towel yet and say school's out for the rest of the year. I'm just not there yet. I don't know that that will be necessary. And I don't know that that's the right thing to do for Rhode Island, for all of Rhode Islanders, parents, kids, educators. So I'm going to hold steady right now for where we are. Distance learning till the end of April. I'll be back next week with more guidance. Because I'm not ready to throw in the towel. I will say this. I get daily reports on distance learning, and you're doing a fantastic job. I've been talking to principals, educators, I had a call with superintendents, parents, I've been talking to parents. This isn't easy. I'm not going to pretend it's easy. There are many, many parents who are working from home and trying to educate their kids or help them get educated at home. Thank you. You are really heroes out there. Teachers are stretching the limits of their creativity. Same with principals and superintendents. But the fact is you're doing a fantastic job. Attendance rates are up, engagement rates are up, and children are learning. Right now, there's nearly a dozen states who have said no school for the rest of the year. There are many states that haven't even tried with distance learning. You're doing it, and you're doing a heck of a good job, and I'm incredibly proud of you. You deserve more guidance. You deserve an opportunity to plan for the long run, and I'm asking you for another week or so before I can give you that guidance. One of the obviously most horrible parts about dealing with this virus is that too many people are out of work. It was a necessary response and one that is taking a toll on Americans all across the country. Here in Rhode Island, that is also true. We have about 160,000 Rhode Islanders who have filed for unemployment since this began. And to those of you, and there are many of you who are struggling financially, I want you to know we are doing everything we know how to do, everything we can do, to support you financially. And we're going to continue to come up with additional ways to help you, more loan programs for small businesses, more tech support for small businesses, better benefits for folks, or quicker access to benefits for folks who are unemployed. For those of you who still have your jobs, I need you to be brave. I need you to be brave and go. If you have to go to work, go to work. I'm not saying it's easy. I know you're nervous. I know you're anxious. If you're a healthcare worker, that is triply so. But we need to be brave together. And if you are on the front lines or you're one of us who goes to work, people are relying on you, and I need you to continue to go to work. And we need to continue to work hard to make sure if you are in the healthcare field, you have the proper protections that you need so that you can be safe. Even though we have 160,000 people out of work, there are many companies who are, believe it or not, struggling to find employees. And a lot of that is because people are afraid to go to work, which is why I'm asking you to be brave. Right now, there are nearly 2,000 openings in Rhode Island for jobs that are critical in our fight against the virus. Healthcare jobs, grocery store jobs, pharmacy jobs, manufacturing jobs, and more. So in an effort to match up some of the people who are unemployed with the 2,000 job openings, we've created a partnership between the Department of Labor and Training and Skills for Rhode Island's Future and the Commerce Department. And as of today, we've launched a state job-seeking platform to help connect Rhode Islanders with these positions. So as of today, if you're looking for a job, or if you're an employer struggling to fill your open positions, I want you to go to employri.org. Employri.org. If you're looking for a job, check it out. Employri.org. They're hiring immediately. If you're a manufacturer or a company that's struggling, you also can go there, and it's a matching function. We want to do everything we can to make sure anyone who wants to work can work. And for those of you who are trying to keep your businesses afloat, I know it's a really tough time to hire folks, so we're going to do everything we can to help you. Okay, so that was a lot of information. Dr. Alexander Scott has even more information, and then we'll come back and answer questions.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon. With hearing what the governor presented on the modeling, I also want to thank the brilliant people inside and outside of state government who've worked together to pull together that modeling work that's informing so much of our response. We hope that you can use that message to encourage, to be motivated, to continue to follow the stay-at-home orders, because it is making a difference, and only you continuing will allow us to have the outcomes that we're striving for. As was posted on the data dashboard on the Rhode Island Department of Health's website, we have a number of additional cases to report today, as well as unfortunate fatalities. Our total number of fatalities was previously 87. There are 18 additional fatalities that we are confirming today, so that we now have a total of 105. Seven people were in their 70s, seven people were in their 80s, four people were in their 90s, and all 18 of these people lived in our congregate care settings, such as nursing homes. It's important to note that nine of these 18 fatalities occurred yesterday. And so that number is consistent with the types of numbers we've been reporting each day. The other nine fatalities occurred during the days leading up to yesterday. There are some reasons for that that contribute to the times that we can sometimes have lags in death reporting, particularly in these congregate settings where there are a lot of challenges that are going on and there is assistance needed in being able to report out. Some of what can occur too is the time needed for test results. For example, if a specimen for testing is collected from someone and then they unfortunately pass away, it can take a few days for that test result to get turned around and then reassociated with that particular death as being a COVID-19 associated death. In Rhode Island, we are working with all facilities in our congregate care settings to make the lag time as short as possible. But it's important to understand that there will be some days where we have some of these cases that take time to get confirmed and added to our overall case count. Tomorrow, I'm also going to discuss the comprehensive range of efforts that we are putting in place to support nursing homes. In advance of that, I want to highlight one of those approaches today. We have designated Oak Hill Center in Pawtucket as a COVID-19 specialty nursing home. Oak Hill Center is now a central facility to accept patients who are being discharged from the hospital and who are COVID-19 positive, but who no longer require the acute level care of a hospital setting. This strategy allows COVID-19 positive patients leaving the hospital to receive specialized rehabilitation and step down post-acute care. That's after leaving the hospital, where they can continue to receive the care that they need while allowing us to reserve hospital beds for patients who need that higher level acuity care. That's an important component, particularly given the modeling data that the governor showed and our continual message about making sure we can preserve the healthcare system to be able to withstand the capacity and maintain the capacity they will need to have to withstand the surge that we are facing. What's important to know is our approach. Residents at other nursing homes who have COVID-19 will continue to remain at their current nursing homes. Our designation of Oak Hill Center as a COVID-19 specialty nursing home is for patients who are leaving the hospitals going forward and being able to have a specialized location for them to continue to receive the care they need. Any resident in a nursing home now will continue to remain where they are and be separate from other residents who may have COVID-19. Particularly for the current residents at Oak Hill Center who do not have COVID-19 symptoms, they will be located in a completely separate unit at Oak Hill Center with their own staff who are able to continue to care for them. They will not have contact with any of the residents who have COVID-19. That's been the case, and that will continue to be the case going forward, even with Oak Hill designated as a COVID-19 specialty nursing home. Oak Hill will have an enhanced level of support and staffing to meet the complex needs of their residents, particularly with this designation. And we will make sure that they have all of the PPE that they need to be able to carry that out. Staff caring for residents with COVID-19 will not be in contact with residents in the unit in the other units where there are residents without COVID-19. And staff working at Oak Hill will not be working at other facilities as well. And of course, all residents will continue to be very closely monitored for any COVID-19 symptoms and continue to achieve and aim for and be supported in implementing very aggressive infection control measures that will remain in place. We are grateful to the staff as well as the administrators at Oak Hill for partnership and for their work in getting this arrangement in place. In addition to people who live in congregate care settings, another major focus for us is people in communities where we have traditionally seen health disparities. We are still working to get increasingly granular with our data, get more and more details with our data so that we can understand our landscape in terms of addressing those disparities. Our preliminary numbers indicate that roughly 45% of our COVID-19 cases in Rhode Island are among Latino Rhode Islanders. That means they are significantly overrepresented in our group of people who have tested positive. We're working extremely hard to get testing sites set up in sites that are more accessible and in our core cities throughout Rhode Island. We're also working with our health equity zone partners. Throughout the state, our health equity zones are committed to ensuring that everyone, regardless of their zip code, gets access to the services and the supports they need in good times and in bad times. It's a ready-made infrastructure that's community-led, looking to reflect the needs of the communities to improve the living conditions, all of which we know contribute to why we are seeing higher rates of COVID-19 in some of our racial and ethnic population groups. Health equity zones and other community leaders have been in touch with us on a daily basis. They are our boots on the ground, talking to residents, raising awareness on issues that are particular to them, and making sure that from Woonsocket to Westerly, concerns and voices of members of their communities are heard. Thank you to our health equity zones and to all of our community and nonprofit partners. You are doing amazing work. We appreciate your partnership, and we need you to continue with us in supporting communities in need right now. So with that, I'm going to stop and get us started with questions.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We're going to begin with Kim Clunian's question from WPRI. Governor, can you share what the state models show in terms of deaths?
Yeah. So the blue line that had been on the screen is approximately 2,000 deaths, and that would be through until October. And the red line is just above 4,000 deaths, same time period, through October. So again, social distancing makes a difference. It's real lives, and that's why it's so important that we continue to do what we're doing.
Richard Asanoff of Convergence RI asks, have you been in contact with community development corporations such as One Neighborhood Builders and West Elmwood to ask what their most critical economic needs are during this pandemic for the vulnerable neighborhoods they serve?
Yeah, we have been. You know, if you have particular concerns, Richard, please reach out to us, reach out to my office, reach out to Commerce. Commerce is the group that's been in touch with them. But as I've said so many times, the people bearing the brunt of this are those who are already in a very vulnerable position. And we are trying every day to provide housing support, food support, healthcare support, support with utilities. But if you know of people who you feel are being left out, then please reach out to us.
Steve Klamkin from WPRO asks, Governor Andrew Cuomo has extended New York shutdown to May 15th in coordination with other states. Is Rhode Island one of those states? Are you going to extend the closures until May 15th?
I don't know yet, Steve. As I just explained, every day we get more information. So it's until May 8th now. And as we get closer to May 8th, I'll make another decision.
Eli Sherman asks, Rhode Island has among the highest deaths per capita in the country, number 8, including D.C. as of yesterday. Can you speak to why that rate is relatively high here, and is there anything that could change in the state's response strategy to help save more lives?
Thank you for that question. The governor touched on this a couple of weeks ago, some of the challenges that we have as a state here in Rhode Island. Many of our unfortunate deaths have occurred in our senior population, and as we've been sharing, many of them have occurred in our congregate care settings, in particular nursing homes. We certainly are one of the states that have higher rates of people who are seniors, and that contributes. And then we also have a dense population. So we've talked about the fact that a higher proportion of the population being seniors, being medically fragile, physically fragile, and being in our congregate care settings can unfortunately contribute to why we are seeing the types of fatalities that we are seeing. It's why I'll be sharing some of the aggressive measures that we are taking with nursing homes tomorrow. And it's why we want to continue to support our congregate care setting communities, knowing that this is a challenging situation. It's important for the staff who are out there every day making sure to take care of those residents. And we'll continue doing what we can to stem the tide and to continue to work closely with that community.
And perhaps you'll both have a response to Nancy Thomas's question from Rhode Island News today. Were you surprised to hear Rhode Island mentioned at the national news conference? And what is your reaction? It sounds like they are very concerned about our state. How did we come to Dr. Burke's level of concern?
Well, I really credit the governor on this. It's a reflection of what she's saying when we're talking to federal leaders, working globally to put Rhode Island where we need to be to best position ourselves. She was able to set up a conversation that I was able to have with Dr. Birx yesterday, talking about what our Rhode Island needs are, what we can do to be most aggressive and to continue to keep us in the forefront of our response. And she acknowledged the tremendous work that's going on here and the density of our population and how that adds a level of challenge to what we need to do. So that message is known. Rhode Island is where we need to be, and we're all going to continue to be on the front lines in this response, a big part of which does connect to you being able to continue to follow the stay-at-home orders so that we can continue to go along the trend that we need to have the best response. You want to add to that?
So thank you for the question. I'll add on to that. I am not entirely surprised. As Dr. Birx said, Rhode Island is nestled between Boston and New York City and Connecticut. Boston and New York City, of course, are hot spots, and they are, as far as we can tell, ahead of us on the curve. So we are still climbing. Our peak is a few weeks away. They're closer to it. So it's not at all a surprise that we would be following them and that we would be experiencing something similar since we're in the same region. I will say, let's remember, though, that we're testing 2 to 3 times as many people per capita as Massachusetts and Connecticut. So some of the reflection of the increase in our cases is due to the fact that we're just doing a lot more testing per million people, which is a good thing. I want to thank Dr. Birx. I brought some things to her attention recently. We were struggling to get a hold of some of the test kits and reagents that we needed. She was responsive. She talked to Dr. Alexander Scott. So it hasn't always been easy to get everything that we've needed, and it's still not, but she was on it, and she's appropriately focused on Rhode Island because we are in a region that's getting hit especially hard.
The next question is for the doctor from Alan Gerberti of WBOB. How long is COVID-19 transmissible in the body after someone passes away? And is this a potential health risk for medical examiners and funeral home workers?
Thank you for that question. It is something that we are still learning in terms of the transmissibility in someone who has unfortunately passed away. But we are working closely with funeral homes, as well as certainly our medical examiner team, who's doing amazing work under the Rhode Island Department of Health, to make sure that they have the personal protective equipment that's needed based on the evidence that we have of what's the best approach for being able to make sure that those staff, as well as the funeral home workers, have the protection that they need. That's definitely a priority for us, as it is for having the healthcare workers have the PPE they need as well.
Thank you. The next question, Governor. Christian Winthrop from the Newport Buzz asks, Newport is renowned for its many large world-class festivals, regattas, and events during the summer. Have you communicated any directives to these event organizers? And what advice do you have for those who are booking travel and making plans to attend?
So it's a good question. It's a difficult question. Of course, we are in touch with Hospitality Association and organizers of large events. I don't yet have any guidance. I will say a few things. Some of it depends on this is still very fluid. So it's 2 months ago we didn't even know about this virus or weren't experiencing it here. And, you know, we're still in April, so it is hard to predict with accuracy where we'll be in July. It also depends on where we are as a nation with respect to a treatment. If we're much further along with effective treatments, then that would also impact our decisions. Having said all of that, from where I sit today and in my conversations with other governors, mayors, the Trump administration, it's hard to see how we would be able to allow large concerts, large gatherings of the kind that you refer to. So we're going to be at this business of some level of social distancing for many months. And so gatherings of the kind that rely upon 1,000 people all coming together in close proximity, it'll be hard. And if they happen, and I hope some do, it'll be under very different regulations with many fewer people, and it'll be a very different kind of event. So short story is we need a little more time to plan, but those are the sorts of events that are going to be the last thing to come back online.
Governor Matt Allen has a two-part question for you. If the models are imperfect, to what degree do you use them when making decisions regarding public policy? Has there ever been an instance where you've decided to ignore the models when making a decision? If so, what was it?
No, I can't think of a time when I haven't done what Dr. Nicole Alexander Scott and her team and other experts recommend. I haven't, and I won't. You have to rely, just because the models are imperfect doesn't mean that they're wholly inaccurate. As I've said, they're directionally correct, and what we do is we update them constantly. You get more information, you update them. You get better information, you update them. None of the decisions we're making, any of us, is perfect, which is why you have to make mistakes, be flexible, and readjust. Do the best you can with the information you have at that point in time. The fact of the matter is, you need to prepare for the worst case scenario. And in this case, the worst case scenario is a situation where you have a healthcare system totally overwhelmed. Not enough hospital beds, not enough ventilators, not enough doctors and nurses, not enough critical PPE. And so you have to have some sense of what's the worst, when could it be, and what do I need to do to get everything in place so it's never that bad. And I would say, as it relates to that, we're in pretty good shape right now, but we can't take our foot off the gas. We cannot take our foot off the gas in readying the system for that kind of a spike, and the public cannot take the foot off the gas in terms of staying at home, wearing masks, washing hands, keeping your contact log. We are very much still in the soup on this. We are very much still in the thick of it. And so just hunker down now, and we'll keep preparing. And at some point, I know that that'll be a lot better.
Thank you. Tara Granahan has a question for Dr. Alexander Scott. If a person tests positive for COVID-19 and sent home to recover, what's the follow-up as to whether they live with elderly relatives or someone immunocompromised?
Yeah, so we have an army of people now that I want to give credit to at the Rhode Island Department of Health and those who have jumped in to support, who do a very thorough case investigation process. When there is someone who is positive, an extensive discussion occurs about where that person can isolate themselves most safely. We've shared before that isolation means someone who has symptoms is able to keep themselves protected from being able to spread those symptoms from anyone around them. Certainly, if you're sick, that's why you need to stay home, because otherwise the symptoms would be brought out into public and would be a concern. But we also talk about how to isolate yourselves when you're home and there are other people who are living in the household. When that discussion occurs, there is particular attention placed on whether or not the other people in the household are high-risk individuals, such as someone who is elderly or someone who has underlying medical conditions, including an immunocompromised condition where their immune system may not be as strong. Those situations are handled on a case-by-case basis, and we may need to at some times see if that individual who has symptoms can stay someplace else safely, or see if the other members of the household who are at higher risk can stay someplace else safely. And then we shared yesterday, the governor talked a little bit about what the quarantine and isolation work stream, the team of people focusing that on that is doing. And some of the resources there also allow us to be able to make sure that if someone has COVID-19 and is recovering, anyone who is at high risk that's in close contact with them is protected in the most appropriate way possible.
Thank you. Our last question today is from Amanda Pitts from ABC 6 News. And Governor, this is for you. What restrictions do you see being implemented at restaurants, workplaces, and other public spaces as the economy opens up?
It's an excellent question, and it's something that we're spending an awful lot of time on now trying to figure out. And that is also the work around which I'm collaborating most closely with other states, because you know, we share many large employers with Massachusetts and Connecticut, and it's important that we get coordinated. So I don't know yet, but it will be things like regular schedules of sanitation, fewer number of people allowed in restaurants at any one time, changes to the way we work in shifts so that you are exposed to the same people on a regular basis, not different groups of people every day. Continued wearing of masks. You can imagine temperature checking before you go into any place, any public place or any workplace. So things of that kind that are designed to allow us to work and go to the park and go to a restaurant and reopen our economy and get our hair cut and do what we want to do, but safely. And by safely, it's a combination of more cleaning, more sanitizing, and continued social distancing. Until we have a treatment and a vaccine, we are unfortunately always going to be exposed to the reality of another spike. And by the way, you see that in other countries that either open too quickly or opened and then everybody, flooded back and they went right back up the ramp again and they had to shut down. So we certainly don't want that to happen. So we're going to have to come out with restrictions industry by industry. What we require restaurants to do will be different than manufacturers, will be different than a law office, but it'll be of the kind that I described. So thank you. Have a good day.